Welcome to the Proper Mental Podcast. Normalizing open and honest conversations about mental health by having open and honest conversations about mental health. To another episode of the Proper Mental Podcast, and this one is episode 20. That's amazing, right? I don't know why, but episode 20 kind of feels like a bit of a milestone. So I'm sat here and I'm pretty chuffed with my little self, if I'm being honest. So yeah, thank you very much for listening. If you've been with me since the start, if you're a new listener, if you're jumping in and out and just happen to have jumped in, thank you very much. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to listen. I've got enough chats recorded and enough things booked in and scheduled and people I'm chatting to easily get to 30 episodes. So there's no sign of stopping yet. So yeah, if you are enjoying, there's plenty more to come. In the meantime, episode 20, my guest today is Caroline Arnold. So Caroline is the CEO at Boar Place, which is a non-for-profit organic farm, and which is a venue committed to sustainability, outdoor education and supporting young people. In 2016, Caroline was invited to deliver a TEDx talk, which she titled Get Back to Nature for Good Mental Health. She firmly believes that being connected to the natural world benefits mental health, and this is exactly what she joined me to chat about on this episode. So it's really cool how this kind of came about. A few weeks ago. It was Mental Health Month, Mental Health Week, whatever it was. And the theme was nature. And I wanted to do a nature episode. I wanted to chat to someone about all things green. And I was kind of looking around, keeping my eyes peeled for someone. And one thing I noticed about all these nature people, there was a lot of them that were kind of hashtagging about mental health and all this sort of stuff. But it all seemed so extreme. You know, like, I don't know, they all just seem to be constantly not wearing any shoes and living in trees and, you know, jumping in the sea all the time and, you know, you're not watching television and having really strict green diets and all this sort of stuff. And I kind of got to thinking, you know, this is not necessarily applicable for a large part of the population. I also thought if people are struggling with their mental health, you know, how are they going to get the benefits from that? That's too big a jump. When you can't get out of bed, how are you supposed to go and live in a tree? You know, it just didn't make a lot of sense. And the other thing, quite cynically, that I noticed is a lot of these people would hashtag mental health awareness and then offer you 20% off some sort of mad vegan protein powder or something like that. So I was looking for something a bit more applicable, something a bit more useful. And I was down a bit of a rabbit hole one night and I stumbled across Caroline's TEDx talk, Get Back to Nature for Good Mental Health. And I was so taken with it. I'm going to put the link in these episode notes. Go and give it a watch because it's absolutely brilliant. Caroline, she comes across so well. She's so passionate about what she's talking about. She really knows her stuff. And yeah, she's just so relatable. She's really vulnerable. You know, there's a couple of bits where she's a little bit emotional and stuff like that. And, you know, she's just absolutely brilliant. And I thought, that is it. That's the sort of person that I need to speak to because it's a conversation that could potentially really, really help someone. And then I had to try and track her down. And Caroline doesn't have a profile, right? So she's not active on social media particularly. She's just a normal woman who's very passionate about nature and she works in nature and she lives in nature and she's just kind of out there just doing her thing on an organic farm. So I managed to track her down via LinkedIn and got her email address and emailed her at work. And yeah, fair play, she was up for having a chat, so we went for it. And it was really cool. I'm so, so chuffed with how it came out. We talk about all sorts of stuff. We talk, of course, about nature. We talk about why it's so useful for mental health. We talk about how to get out in nature and then what to do when you get there. We just chat about some ideas about modern society and how it's kind of like pulled us away from the natural and maybe that plays a part into why so many people are struggling. And then we go down a couple of rabbit holes that I wasn't really expecting, which were brilliant. And we start chatting about sustainability and, you know, how growing organic food and, you know, what we put in our bodies affects our minds and how we kind of take nature for granted because we don't look after it. But by planting your own food and growing your own food, it's kind of got all these different benefits of you actually starting to care about the nature around you and care more about what you put into your body and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And yeah, it was really, really good. We chat all about the amazing work they're doing at Boar Place. Yeah, it's just fantastic. And if you'd like to know a bit more about Caroline and Boar Place, you can go to www.boarplace.org or at Boar Place on social media. I will put the links to her TEDx talk in these notes, but it's called Get Back to Nature for Good Mental Health with Caroline Arnold, and that was from 2016. And I think that's everything you need to know. If you want to connect with me on social media, it's at Proper Mental Podcast. And you can get me on all the usual platforms. If you would like to do me a solid and leave me a review and some lovely kind words, that would be fantastic. Yeah, other than that, this is the Proper Mental Podcast, episode 20 with Caroline Arnold. Thanks for listening. Enjoy. And that is live. So here we are with another episode of the Proper Mental Podcast. And I am joined today by Caroline Arnold. How are you, Caroline?
I'm really good, thank you, Tom.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Thank you very much for joining me. I really appreciate your time. And I suppose as we record this, it is Mental Health Awareness Week in the UK, and the theme is nature. And kind of off the back of that, I went down a bit of a YouTube rabbit hole to see if I could find someone interesting to speak to about our connection to nature and how it can help mental health. And I stumbled across your TED Talk, Caroline, and I was really, really taken with it. And there's a few reasons for that I'm sure we'll get into. But I suppose like the main reason and a good place to start with is your passion for nature was obvious. It really, really came through on your talk. And I suppose, yeah, what where did that passion come from? Did you grow up in the countryside, Caroline? Or
yeah, sure. So I think it's one of those things that we all take for granted. I think when you think about this last 12 months, obviously everyone's connected with the outdoors so much more.
In terms of, sure.
You know, go for a walk, which is fabulous. But I think it's that taking for granted thing that I recognise in myself as well. I grew up not probably engaging in it as much as I liked. And then I unfortunately did have some bad experiences that I lost some family members, and some friends of mine really grabbed me and picked me up and took me off, I'm not joking, to Norway with tents skiing in the middle of winter as part of my, I know what Caroline would like. And I was like, really? And off I went. And it was phenomenal, because it was that, for me, what it was, it gave me this massive disconnection with life and freedom and just being peaceful and unplugged and in this place. And from there, I became more and more interested in how I felt and how it made me feel. And I've spent more and more time outdoors, and so much so that my career has changed even so to ensure that I'm outdoors as much as possible. And I'm, you know, that's become such a big focus of my life. I probably think the other thing with nature is I was really lucky when I was around probably 16. I had a massive environmental awakening at that point and knew I wanted a career in environmental science. So it was, I wanted to do something, I wanted to make a difference. So I went off and studied that at university, and it definitely cemented this feeling about, look, this is our planet. We're just one species on this planet, and we need to take responsibility to look after it, not just take, take, take. So all those things came together really in me caring about it and wanting to do something about it.
Yeah, sure.
That connection thing, isn't it? You know, I got the connection, and I actually feel really strongly now. I spent a lot, most of what I do from a work perspective is about connecting people with that now, so that they can get what I got from it, because I know it's what you need from a wellness point of view.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, very much so. And it's, we're kind of only now becoming more and more aware of that, really. It's people are coming aware of that connection. And the problem is, because we've kind of become so disconnected from it, and that seems to play some sort of factor in a lot of the rising mental health stats that are going on at the moment, right?
Yeah, I think so. I you know, in the last decade, we've got to a point where half the population of the world are living in urban centres. And what's clear for me is humans, as Homo sapiens, as a species, actually for 99% of our evolution, we would have been living on the land and in the land and with the land. So we are what I phrase as almost like a fish out of water. We're in our wrong habitat, and therefore, almost from a physiological point of view, we're impacted by that in ways that we don't even understand. And I think that's the thing about a being, isn't it? We're humans and we're here doing what we're doing. I'm sat in this space now, but it's recognizing where we naturally should be. You know, if you Well, it's interesting. It does happen, doesn't it? Cows are farmed in buildings. That's not right. Cows should be out eating grass. So the same with human beings. We almost should be living in and with the land, and that's not what we do anymore. Some people are doing it, but a very small percentage of the population.
Yeah, we've kind of been swept away, you know, swept away from that completely by society, I suppose. So something that continues to come up on the podcast again and again and again is something that kind of around about authenticity and what seems to be a real stumbling block for people, a real factor in people being unwell.
Yeah.
Is anytime they're forced to live in a way that they're not, you know, aligned with. And it tends to be more of like through work and, you know, day-to-day relationships, debt, all these sorts of things. But then when you look at nature as the whole, you could apply that to all of society, right? Because even if you're kind of like doing a job you love, and even if you're living in a certain way and, you know, all that, you know, if you're not connecting to nature, we're missing that big picture of, you know, of what we are and where we come from.
I think part of that for me is also about pace. We all live so much driven, and you know, it's all about progress. It's all about how much money you've got. And just the culture thing, particularly in our country, you know, in UK, for me, it feels very much that how do you measure success? I've, you know, had a debate with a number of friends, and it's all about how much money I've got and how much I'm progressing in my career. And then everyone's so driven by output and achieving things, and we forget to take that time of just being. And I think that's what a walk can do for you, is, or just even better, just sit there and stop and let your mind run wild, because it will. If we go on a walk, our brain's still going to be, you know, turning away with what am I going to do next? And I guess it's also this task orientated thing. We've got to keep doing stuff. It's just the way we've all become. And therefore, I feel we've really lost our way, really, in terms of probably stopping and thinking about how we're feeling. And you could do that anyway. You don't need to be in nature to stop and think about how do I feel and is this what I want to do? But equally, if you're in nature, I think you get an extra, I don't know, 10% factor or some extra dimension that it gives you in empowering you to stop.
Yeah.
And it sounds, you know, I say it and I'm not a wacky person. It's not that this is about that, I think. But if you just stop, I mean, a couple of things for me would be, if you take time to look at a bird, and just if a bird is near you, just have a really good look at it and have a think about it. It stood on the tiniest little legs. And how does that possible? And then you look at the bird a little bit closer and it's got all these tiny little feathers, and just stopping and concentrating on that stops your mind. And it's just wondrous. And I think, I don't know, I hope that almost everybody would get a sense of, wow. And just from something so simple. And if you look at a leaf or you look at bark on a tree, everything's so intricate, and we're just missing the lot because we're just onto the next thing or back on our screen or whatever it's going to be. And I think for me, it's the power of, you know, if you meditate, or, you know, mindfulness is spoken about more and more, and the Headspace app, it's doing all of these things. But I kind of feel that actually it's there without getting an app out. And that's what I would like to encourage, is that more kind of just take the time and look, you know, at something and really reflect and think and be wowed by it, because nature is amazing. It's just, how does a plant every year get a flower on its head? How does that happen? Why is the grass green? It's all so simple, but actually we take it all for granted.
Yeah, we really do. Yeah. And it's interesting you say that, actually, because whenever like David Attenborough brings a new program out, the viewing figures are always like through the roof.
Yeah.
And everyone goes, wow, isn't that amazing? But then doesn't, you know, we think it's doesn't something it we have to watch on TV, right?
Yes.
You don't have to go and connect with the smaller things.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe I need to write to David and encourage him to think about actually putting some call to action around, okay, you love my stuff. How about it? You know, how about, and what's great, you know, is that what I'm really concerned about, I guess, is future leadership in terms of this agenda. You know, David has got such a massive following, phenomenal. But and Greta's done an amazing job in raising consciousness, great. But I'm really worried about our future kids. If they're growing up in the society that they are, what's the chances we're going to have the people in 10, 15 years challenging government, challenging policy, reflecting on actually ensuring this stuff gets protected and looked after? And with the, you know, current climate crisis, people are talking about biodiversity crisis. For me, I still have a real sense that we're just not acting fast enough. And unless we get more people connected to it, no one's going to fight for it. You know, we're not, it's the money that counts every time, not the things that we're losing.
No, of course. Yeah, you have to care to take that action, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that sense of wonder that you mentioned as well, that's Yeah, it just goes quick. You know, you see it in kids. Kids are still amazed by, you know, picking up a stick or seeing an unusual animal or something. But yeah, we lose it. And I suppose if we're so overstimulated and nature, we don't even know we are, right? Because that's just what everyone is. And we're all jacked up on coffee and work. And
you know, we're all evolved into this new state of being.
Yeah. State of doing, right? Rather than a state of being.
And I think the other thing we completely don't appreciate is nature is what gives us our food. Okay, so, and the British landscape that we also love, and we look at it and go, wow, you know, and all these tourists in the US will come over and come and look at our amazing fields and hedgerows and trees and forests and ancient woodlands, and they're absolutely gobsmacked by it. But that is nature, that's what's giving us that. And actually, the reason the landscape looks as it does is because of the way we farm with it. So to grow food, you need really good soil. If you look in the soil, there's so many microbes and things acting in there. And the way that man's interfaced with this is, you know, obviously farming more intensively than they should, using pesticides to manage it to get this perfect crop or whatever it's they're working with. And people don't understand that food comes from nature, from the land. And actually, when you create food, you create landscapes. And therefore, that's why we live in such an amazing country, because of the long-term history of working and being with the land and being with nature. And alongside that, for me, the concern will be how we farm isn't sustainable. And actually, what's important now is it's not about being sustainable, it's about being regenerative. We've got to put more in than we take. And we've got to be thinking about nature in terms of enhancing the land so we get better food production in the future, not run out of options in the UK to produce our own food. Yeah. And alongside that is also about supporting the people who work in those communities who do so. So there's a social impact thing too. So it's nature has got this magical power for well-being, but it's got a magical power for assisting us as a country in terms of food production and well-being from food. So it's very multidimensional, and we just don't stop and think about that whole package. So
yeah, definitely. And, you know, health, mental health is multifaceted. Health is multifaceted. And, you know, it kind of comes full circle, because if you're getting spending more time getting better food out of the ground, well, you know, your mental state is really affected by what goes in your mouth, what goes in your eyes, what goes in your ears, all these type of things, right? So it kind of like it comes around full circle, and missing that loop a little bit. Yeah.
Really, yeah. Because I say one other thing for me that we learn here. So I work at Ball Place, which is a 300 acre estate that's been dedicated to how we farm and how we produce food and how we share that learning, how we think about farming alongside nature and enhance nature at the same time. So it's a whole system. You know, we're not just thinking about one thing. But the other thing is a place where you can come and stay. It's a place where we also run education programs for young people, where we're trying to give that experience so that they get a sense of what they need in their lives from a wellness point of view, and they understand it's raising this consciousness. So we have advocates for the future. But another component part, which is really important, is young people with additional needs or mental health issues thrive in this environment, because we find kids who may be more boisterous or have behavioural issues come here, and because they're not trapped in a room and in a school environment, they might be under really strict behavioural policies because they've smashed a window or done something quite destructive, which is part of who they are or how they're feeling and part of maybe a condition they have. Here they're safe, and we don't have to put in those same kind of risk management policies. We don't have to worry about their behavior because they change. And it's recognizing as well that I guess I believe it's because, again, coming back to that, who we are as a human being, and we're trapped in these environments that aren't good for us. And there are certain, from an education and wellness point of view, for certain young people in society who can't conform or fit into the box that is the school system, that actually here they really do have the opportunity to flourish and fly. And we're working hard now to try and find that evidence to help advocate that story, because I think it's very easy to say it, but you need to influence policy. You've got to have hard evidence and facts. And I'm in a place now where we're trying to, as well as provide the services and the experiences and the learning opportunities here, I really want to find a way that I can show that tangibly, so that we can affect the health system, the policy system, and very big and grandiose challenges. But actually, I'm not just wanting to sit here and just do, I also want to influence. And and what an opportunity, and it comes down to that passion thing, doesn't it? You know, it's what I believe in. I really feel lucky that age 16, I had this spark of caring about the planet. and feel like I'm almost doing my hobby, and get paid for it. Great. But actually not just that, I get to influence and make people's lives better.
Do you see, is the change relatively quick with these young people when they come through the gate?
I would say, I mean, I don't work directly with them because of the job I have here, but I would say that my staff would say that it doesn't take long before they settle here and the management issues change in terms of needing to manage that behaviour. We've got, because we're outdoors, there's so much space, so you've got places to go to with them. So if they're struggling with something, you can go and do something else. And that variety and change and creating education around somebody being bespoke about it, when you've got young people who have that, those who require that additional support and that additional nurturing and enabling in their learning, having space really helps. And I know in London that isn't possible, so we do have to recognize there are limitations about what we can do. But even though we're a very busy, packed country, there is so much countryside that is very untapped, I think, in terms of this potential, really. And the traditional system's not providing for it. It's the charitable sector that is providing for it. And, you know, through COVID, there'll be a lot of charitable organisations who won't be here probably come September, which is really sad. So I guess we're great. We're fine as an organisation. We're going to bounce back. And my team and everyone here is even more determined to do more for people to give them this experience. It's very important that I would look after a resource that's been left for charitable purposes. It's here for public benefit. So how do I use this place to enable it? And it's been a gift. I'm custodian of it, and I feel really empowered and wanting to make the most of it, which is, amazing opportunity. So we'll see how it goes in the next 12 months, I think. I'm really looking forward to what's ahead now. We've all got our energy back now as an organisation, because you can imagine it's been really tricky. Are we going to survive? How's this going to be? But now we're like, right, okay, we need to do this, and we're going to go for it. So
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, great stuff. I think it kind of feels with the pandemic that, you know, at first, particularly the first lockdown last year, and it did feel like, you know, the planet was having a bit of a much needed breather, you know. Yes. And I think seeing how certain things changed was quite shocking for people, and maybe people had that realization, you know, of what we do maybe take for granted. And then with people not being able to go out, there did seem to be a lot of people like craving that outdoors, you know, and it could well give people that spark. You know, a lot of people relied on their daily walk outside to kind of keep themselves ticking over mentally, you know, and that's hopefully something we can take forward, you know.
Definitely. You know, I think it's interesting, isn't it? You know, people have gone for walks where they live, where they've never done it before. So, I mean, almost everybody I've walked in places I've never walked before. We all have done that. And I think we've all probably got a bit braver, because I think the other thing is people generally, I don't know what the stats are on it, but I can guarantee it would be high in terms of, you know, closer to the 100 than the 50%. I've probably never walked in the countryside. They don't feel comfortable. They don't feel confident. They don't know how to do it. Am I allowed to? What we have found from a farming point of view is people probably have wandered and strayed more than they should, which is an issue. You're right. It's amazing that they're doing it, but isn't it also amazing actually that they never did it before or never felt confident to? And the fact that people have stepped over the threshold, I suppose, into nature again, I'm really, really hopeful that benefit they've experienced continues. And that actually we as a society and as a culture and as organizations all across the country embrace that in terms of how people return to work, and, you know, the flexible working and organizational policy in terms of supporting staff, in terms of well-being. Let's get away from the traditional, let's get away to the more exciting and innovative, and probably talk to staff about what they want, what they need. You know, it's I think it's gonna be really interesting to see how it goes. I really hope people just don't return to the shops and that's all they do.
Yeah, definitely. There is that worry, isn't it, that we're going to just sort of just bounce back so quick that we forget all the, I was thinking if there was a book, you know, we call it like Lessons from Lockdown, and just study all the things that came up for us. But it was amazing. I just sat in my garden and was noticing, you know, like birds singing away that I'd not spotted before in my garden. I don't know if they were there anyway or if I just always
been
too busy to
there. I think it's always, you know, it's a sense thing, right? I think we don't even recognize our senses. You know, we don't even think what we're doing. We're walking along. We don't even think of that as a physical act. And I think if you stood in your garden, you just closed your eyes, so suddenly your hearing's heightened, But if you'd already done that before, you would have been like, okay. And then if you stop and think, well, what can I smell? It's so simple. And I bet clearly your nose is functioning, but you're not even smelling anything. But if you stopped and smelt and thought about the fact you were smelling, it will be absolutely sensory overload. And it's so simple. It really is so simple.
Mm. Where do you think the reluctance comes from? Do you think we're just kind of a bit too scared of discomfort, maybe, when it comes to nature?
I think, you know, the point you mentioned about people not knowing how or where to go, or people will probably think, oh, I'll go to a National Trust property, or I'll go to my provincial park, which is all very managed. It's almost, again, it's humanized. It's not nature. It is nature, but it's not as radical as maybe going to your national park or just going and looking on the map and seeing where that green dotted line on the OS map takes you. Because ultimately, this whole country has been mapped. We've got the most public footpaths. I don't know what the stats are internationally, but we've got most public access, I suspect, than many, many countries. We'd be up in the top, you know, quartile, if not in the top 5% in terms of access and places to go. I think people are just too busy, task focused. And I feel that they're just onto the next thing. And it's this thing about what is progress, you know, and this well-being thing traditionally has all been about taking medication. It's all about taking medication post the act, not preventative medicine. And we're all used to taking a tablet for something as opposed to not taking medication. It's just the way medicine is. And this clearly wellness is medicine in its own kind. It's a different type of way of treating illnesses and conditions. I mean, I think a lot of conditions can be treated with a good dose of some fresh air and some smelling and some green, you know, just being outside. I'm sure of it. And interestingly, that whole green prescribing agenda is happening, but it's very slow. And I'm sure with COVID, there'll be a lot of questions asked about the future. I think there will be people who are taking note, nationally at policy level and in the NHS thinking about it. But it's just, we're in big systems, aren't we? These systems take a long time for things to happen.
Yeah.
So I think if we can enable and encourage the grassroots level to take more proactivity with it, it could be a really good thing. In terms of that awareness raising and making people know there's other opportunities. Yeah.
Yeah, because the green prescribing, it, like you say, it's one of those things that I hear talked about a lot, but don't hear of it happening so much. Like, it's a thing, it's out there, but you don't necessarily come across it. Because in your talk, you mentioned Japan and the forest bathing and stuff, stuff like that. Yeah,
I mean, that was a national program where they really looked hard at what it takes and the benefit of trees. Now, I'm not a scientist in terms of understanding the science behind it or the medical output of it, but being in a forest area is very rich in terms of the natural things that your body needs in terms of well-being. And it, as I said, I'm not an expert in this, but I've read about it in the past and I've just listened and thought that makes sense. And I think that's often with nature, when you look at it and read about it, it makes sense because it just does, and it's just there. It's crazy. But as a country, they really did a lot of work on it, understanding it. And it's great that they did, because this term forest bathing is popping up more now. It does sound a bit, hippie-ish and a bit not for everybody. So we have to be really careful, because this stuff isn't like that. It's not about creating communes or, we can normalize this stuff. But the term bathing almost means immersion. That's really the key thing. It's about being immersed in it, being in it, being present. You know, that's another thing we talk about a lot. So for me, I think it's great that level of understanding and research has come from Japan. And in the US and in New Zealand, there's lots of talk about green prescribing more than in the UK. But we need to, I'm going to start to run some programs here around this type of opportunity, but normalize it. I'm really keen to get to the normal folk, not the folk who would have been interested or doing this anyway.
That's
a real challenge, because if I put some programs out and say, come and do this, the normal people, the regulars will show up. That's great, but we almost need two sets of audiences. It's the marketing, but then I will rely on social media and tech. I will rely on the screens to pull it off, but that's fine, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
everything's got its role and purpose.
yeah, we don't have to turn our back on the new stuff. It's all about just using it applicably, right? And getting that balance. Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I've never thought of it like that. But yeah, of course, all the people who are into the stuff anyway are the ones that sign up for all the workshops and all the days out and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, it's how to do it. And a lot of stuff that's really good for mental health does have slightly hippie or spiritual connotations, you know, whether it's nature, whether it's meditation, all these sorts of things. And that is easy for people to write them off as nonsense.
Not for me.
Stick to the rat race, right? Stick to the
But you kind of hope that, yeah, I'd love that green prescription thing. I'd love to give everyone a green prescription and say, okay, everyone in the UK, it's a national mandate, which is clearly against how we are, but survival from COVID, not only do you have to have your jab, but you need to go and have these six sessions of empowerment and connecting you back to this well-being thing that you've probably already experienced during lockdown, but it's almost that habit. You know, we all know it's habit, right? Whether it's someone going on a diet or going to do fitness, or you have to create a new habit. So from this point of view, I know there's a theory about how long you have to do something before it becomes a habit. I don't know if it's 6 weeks or something like this, but it would be great if, in terms of a well-being thing, how difficult would it be for this to be this mandate where everyone's got to do it for 6 weeks and let's see what happens next?
That sounds great. Yeah, I've got a bit of a theory as well, and it's not based on anything at all, but I think sometimes if you give the body or the brain a little bit of what it wants, it will start telling you it wants more of it, you know? Yeah. So like if I haven't had my outdoor fix for a day or two, for whatever reason, I can feel it in my body. Yeah. Like it's almost like a physical.
That's great. That goes back to that physiological need. You know, when you think about it, we've all heard about need theories and things that you need, you're right. But so physiologically, as I said, you know, 99% of the time that humans have existed, you would have been doing that. It's only in this very small period that we're in now that we've got ourselves to this place and this state. So I think you're right. I think it's in there. And I think that need, we've all probably got that innately in us. So I think, it would be great if we could get more people connecting, because it is this disconnect that we talk about with nature. And if we can get that inner connection thing moving. And it's interesting, your body's telling you that. And I suspect it's also your mind telling you that. So, and obviously we're so complex, we've got no chance of really understanding what's going on in terms of mind and body. We just be, we accept it, we carry on. I feel if that connection, and to this level you're mentioning, if you get that sense, I think it could be very, very powerful.
So. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And we put a lot of blockers in the way. You know, I think about this, well, I've got two small children, and if I leave my front door unlocked, they'll be out. And it doesn't matter what the weather's doing. It doesn't matter what they're wearing. They'll be out. And it's we say things like, you know, oh, you'll get cold. And my son's like, I don't want to wear a coat, you know? Yeah. And, you know, we put all these things in between us and the world around us. And then, you know, later on in life, do you want to go for a walk? Oh, it might rain. I might stay in, you know? But sometimes that extra level of connection, you know, getting soaked on a walk or coming back and feeling a bit cold, and that kind of it drags you in a little bit more, right?
It's true. And that's about an experience. I think what we try and do here is about create those experiences for children who come here. I want every young child to be able to roll down a hill lying sideways, that I definitely did as a kid. And we know, I mean, I have children here who have never even sat on grass.
Wow.
That's how disconnected some parts of the UK are and some young people's lives are. And, you know, they don't know that milk comes from a cow. You know, by coming to our farm, they get to see and experience this. They don't know the simple things. And I suspect the knowledge gap is getting bigger and bigger. I want every child to have slept outside under the stars and been in the dark, made a fire, smelt a fire. You know, we've all got memories from a child, as a child, that are the things that draw us back into things later in life. So if children aren't getting that opportunity, and obviously if everyone's busier, their children are going to get less opportunities. It's very easy to say, oh, just pop on your iPad for a couple of hours. And you're like, oh my gosh, it wasn't half an hour. It's now 4 hours later.
Yeah.
So we all know that's what's going on. And you're right about this kind of stopping children from being children. You know, we are much more restrictive in terms of in all sorts of ways. We don't like the idea of kids getting muddy. They might get ill from that. the reverse is true. You need to have your immune system built on having eaten vegetables straight out of a field. Otherwise, guess what? You're going to get ill because you're going to get poorly because you can't cope with the naturalness going into your body. And that is definitely happening.
Yeah, 100%. Crazy. Yeah, it comes back to that, you know, being part of, yeah, part of us and part of the environment, yeah, and stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah. I also think as well, you know, when we avoid the colder days, when we avoid the rain, when we make life too easy for ourselves, it kind of, we lose a certain amount of resilience. And as human beings, like, we are designed to generally be able to like get through stuff, you know, like life was hard for our ancestors, yeah, and you know, and they kind of got us to a place where we are now. And yeah, we kind of lose a certain amount of resilience, I think. And then when life gets particularly hard, we don't necessarily have the tools to deal with that. And I think nature can teach us those tools, you know, they can teach us how to deal with being a bit cold, being a bit uncomfortable, having a stone in your shoe and, you know, those sorts of things. It can,
Yeah, no, that's really, really true. I think this word resilience gets talked about more and more now, doesn't it? And for me, it's again, when children come here, they get given responsibility really early on. So I'm really interested in year five, year six. So that's the 10 and 11 year olds who are in primary, progressing onto secondary school. And it's a big jump in terms of life. And there's quite a lot of children who really haven't had to do a lot for themselves anymore. It's just the way society's progressed. And the idea that they come here and they have to go and pick their veg and cook their food together, they have to take responsibility for clearing up together, they have to, you know, clean the room, wipe the tables, cope with these new relationships by staying over with their friends and peers, and there will be, oh, I don't want to sleep next to him, and all this stuff going on, all the stuff that we experience in life later. You have to work through this thing early in your life to build that, like you say, the coping and the sense of how it feels and not feeling overwhelmed by it. I think a lot more people feel more overwhelmed in life than ever before.
Yeah.
So I feel that, yeah, if there's a way to provide those opportunities to give young people those experiences, we've got to do that. Mm. So for me, it's the children I want to have the opportunity to come here are those who just don't have any exposure in their lives to this kind of, like the ones I was talking about in terms of not being able to, never sitting on grass. Those children need this experience and they need the full package. And then it's also those who are in a very mollycoddled, probably, which is almost every child, almost certainly, generally.
Yeah.
And therefore haven't built that resilience early on. They're the skills, they're the experiences, they're the things that we can safely nurture them on. Because it's not about chucking them outside and saying, see you in 5 hours. It's about, you know, we don't do that. But it is about a nurturing, hand-holding, pushing their boundaries, making them go above and beyond. And often people do that by sending them on, you know, big high rope activities and zip wire. And I think those things have a place, but I think it's a calmer, coping, nurturing experience is what they need, because you can't just go on a zip wire every day, you know. So that's not going to be a coping strategy or a tool for life. It does give you a sense of, you know, I've achieved something, I push myself out of my comfort zone. But for me, it's much more about providing these experiences and these nurturing opportunities that are, yeah, more about something you can embrace every day in your life.
Yeah, sure. We have to learn as adults, almost. We have to learn how to downregulate, right? Because people just don't know how to do it. Yeah, so setting that up in children. Because mental health, we're not proactive about mental health. We're reactive. So everyone says, oh, it's good to talk, but it's only good to talk when you have a breakdown. But, you know, we need to get to a stage where we never get to that place, right? Yeah.
That's a really, really good point. And again, I think we're all built to think we have to cope. It's not right if we can't cope. We're failing. Everyone is not coping. We all have days when we don't cope. We need to just be really open about that and be truer to recognizing how we're feeling and not just packing it back down. Yeah. I suppose if you've got nature in your life every day and went for a little bit of a walk, it's going to take you may be less unlikely to get to that breaking point. You know, that's the point. That's preventative, isn't it? That's the stopping, but also being open about what's going on with you.
Yeah, definitely. Do you have, with the children that come in, do you have like therapists that work alongside them, or do you have someone on site who can help with that sort of stuff?
So our approach is lighter touch at the moment in terms of not getting quite to the point where there's therapeutic support, but almost everybody here has that therapeutic outlook. We have run programs here where therapists have been on site as well, but it's a very expensive and intensive thing to do. And you know, we've had funding for those types of programs, but the biggest problem is that the way the third sector, charitable sector works is you get given a grant, it runs out. They're not interested in funding the ongoing. They want a new exciting idea. So I therefore recognize that therefore isn't something that is sustainable. And we're here about all developing things that other people could do that could be sustainable. So we're not reliant on that external funding that comes in and gets turned off.
Yeah, fantastic.
So our programs are much more working alongside schools with their young people. So they come here, but they're still within their school bubble. And in time, I want to go, what we're not doing yet is going into the school and talking to those heads and having a conversation around, okay, look at what these kids are achieving at Ball Place. Look at the difference we're making. Is there more that we could be doing with you? Could it be that you embrace Ball Place Farm as part of your school? And you say part of our resource is Ball Place Farm. Because what I'm interested in is mainstreaming this stuff, not being some wacky project on the side. It has to function and work in a way that others can replicate it and do it. And I think we're getting there. And in the next few years, one of my parts of my job has to shift into sharing that, influencing, creating an understanding, supporting others to do it. So I think I'm coming out of COVID. I want to spend the next 12 months really honing what we do to adjust it in a way that reflects what the need is. You know, it's not about what do we think, it's what is the need and how do we establish ourselves to meet that need using the resources we have in our lovely environment that we have here. And then after that, we need to be going out and supporting others to do other stuff and similar stuff.
Yeah.
Is sustainable, that isn't reliant on grants, because that model is broken. It does not work. It's not, the system's not there. And maybe the NHS will catch up a bit more along the way, or maybe the education sector, because this is the interesting thing, isn't it? This is health and education, two different government departments. Where's the bit in the middle? I'm going to give it a good go, Tom.
Yeah, good for you, mate. Yeah,
exactly.
It's like, I suppose it's like coming full circle. So we've come so far away from nature and now we're trying to bring it back. But if you go back far enough and it would have said and would have told people the future of where we'd end up, they would have said, no, that's not possible. That's bonkers. Why on earth would we do that? And that's where we find ourselves. And now when we talk about going back, people say, oh, that's a bit mad, isn't it? but really.
If you can explain it, and this is the thing, isn't it? It's quite complicated to talk about, but it's actually not. It's actually being true to who we really are, and you know, going back to basics in so many ways. I mean, that term back to basics, I think we've all heard it. So there needs to be a bit of a campaign about going back to basics or something. It's like after the war, there was a whole bunch of campaigns and agendas that were sold about, and I don't know, I know they exist, I can't remember what they are, but I would really like to see what that was like and reflect on what it should be the campaign for now. And I think it should be the campaign around the wellness side, and it should be the campaign around this connection of nature that we've got and what we're going to do about it.
Yeah, definitely.
This is a great conversation. You're giving me more ideas I didn't even know I had.
Oh, look at that. Fantastic. Yeah, that's what we're here for.
Yeah, great.
But I think, you know, Mental Health Awareness Week, having nature as their topic, I think that's a sign. And things are really starting to grow a little bit. Like there's a lot of cold water swimming communities that seems to be getting, you know, and that's much more about completely emerging.
Immersion again.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Just going for it. Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. Well, you know, I absolutely love the sound of the stuff that you're doing there. And it'd be, if we can get that nature back into the mainstream to help people out, that'd be really, really cool.
Yeah. That's great. Fantastic. It's great to talk about it. You know, it's the same old thing, isn't it? Just having the opportunity to talk to you about it is unleashing some stuff, you know, in terms of my mind. It's not about talking about the bad stuff. It's about talking about the good stuff.
And if anyone's listening, then I think we can both say, you know, pop your headphones on and listen to this on your walk, right? Go outside.
Yes, that's a good idea.
There's a field, kick your shoes off, get your toes muddy and listen to this episode while you go for a stroll.
And then switch it off, take your headphones off and close your eyes and use all your senses.
So. Yeah. Because it doesn't have to be complicated, right? Because I think something that social media has done when you talk about nature, like if you put into nature, and it's another reason why your talk struck me so much, it's because it was just so achievable and so normal, the things that you were talking about, you know,
it's
so relatable. Yeah, that's it. And, you know, you go on social media and put some of this stuff in and they think you have to live in a tree and completely submerge it like some sort of Swiss Family Robinson setup. But it's really not that complicated. Hey, just five minutes breathing and mindfulness and taking it all in.
Yeah, go for a walk. That's pretty much it. But not try and get to a place where it's more raw. It's more countryside than man-made. Because I think that's the thing with green spaces. They're often man-made in urban centres. You know, if you can, you know, it'd be like take a bus, get on the train, try and go out somewhere a bit further afield. Look at OS maps. I mean, these are an amazing resource. They've got green dotted lines. They tell you exactly where you can go. You know, and again, it's probably pushing yourself a little bit. Try something new. But again, what's the worst can happen? You know, you will bump into someone who will help you because people are very friendly.
Yeah, no, that's it. Yeah. And, you know, go for a short walk and then, you know, hop back on your bus and go home, you know, just dip your toe in.
Yeah. It's a bit of an adventure, isn't it? It's trying something new. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Well, I really enjoyed that, Caroline. Thank you so much for your time, mate. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, it's been lovely talking to you. Thank you too.
Oh, super.
Take care.
Ta-da now.
Thank you for listening from the Proper Mental Podcast. Please like and subscribe.
Plus 5 stars.